Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Ghostwriter, the blimp is down.
There will be no flyby. Negative, Ghostwriter, the pattern is full.
Well, it's down. It's down near Turbotville. The Pentagon says they can neither confirm nor deny. They can see it. It's in the trees. Neither confirm or deny. Okay. You're either lying or incompetent. You're fired. Hey, the Redland Little League is going to be honored on Saturday at the Penn State football game. In fact, they're going to honor them between at the end of the first quarter, as a matter of fact. So it'll be great to have them back here. They had a lot of fun. And, of course, I've already told my Little League story for the week with Mikey Conforto, Mike Conforto of the Mets. I told Jay Paterno that story this morning. And I said, you know, we were talking about players or whatever, because I mentioned, you know, Chris Young of the Royals, for example, played basketball in the Jordan Center for Princeton against Penn State and the NIT. And I said, yeah, and I said, the irony is Mike Conforto plays in, you know, started for the Mets. And I said, you know, I mean, I said, Jay, you've met him. And he looks at me and says, what? When did I meet him? And I told him the entire story about Robbie Gould, about the two-a-day, missing field goals, how mad his dad got. Finally in the afternoon, the team showed up. You know, the reporters were there. Joe, you know, looking at Mikey and saying, you know, you're a better athlete than your dad. And you know, his dad played, of course, linebacker here at Penn State. He's from Altoona. So, yeah, so when you watch the game, there are connections in this. And he said he forgot all about it. And he remembers everything. Anything you need to add about the blimp? I mean, that's kind of...
They still haven't confirmed that it's down. But the PSP have confirmed it. Now, their report was, the report we have was in the Muncie area. But
who's in charge of this thing? Who's in charge down there? Hey, really? All right.
We don't care that you have somebody actually visually eyeballing it. We're still not confirming it. Thank you.
All right. Well, there's a lot going on here, and Penn State will play Illinois Saturday in Beaver Stadium. Penn State has announced that they're going to go out and take a long look at the facilities at Penn State and then make some decisions. And naturally, the one that is the centerpiece happens to be Beaver Stadium that everyone exponentially cares about. It's a gorgeous day. James Franklin would even recruit on a day like this. So, Sandy Barber, welcome. It is great to have you with us on the show.
Absolutely. I'm with James. It's a beautiful day in Happy Valley.
It always is. All right. Obviously, facilities is something that has really made the news for Penn State moving forward. I feel like I'm watching that scene in Apollo 13 when they come around from the backside of the moon and Swigert and Hayes get into an argument and Tom Hanks says, guys, there's 650 things that have to happen between now and we splash down. We're up to number 8. I feel that really sums up where your situation is in this process. Is that an accurate way of putting it?
You know what? I think it really is. There are a lot of moving parts, and as you know, we've been having some town halls, and they've been fantastic, but there have been some comments about, well, you know, there are no specifics here, or there's really no plan, or, and you don't even know how much it's going to cost. Well, actually, that's the point of doing the facilities master plan, is for us to solicit the assistance of a professional consultant who does these kinds of things for a living. The planning of facilities is up on all of the latest ways to address needs that intercollegiate athletic programs have. So we've engaged with Populous. We're now in the process of talking to literally hundreds of stakeholders, all of our coaches, student athletes, those that work on game day, those that work with academics, every aspect of the student athletes, and frankly, the fans' life. And what is it we need? Where are we? Where should we be? And what are those gaps? And how do we close those gaps? And how much will it cost? And that'll be the outcome of this, 8 months from now.
And what's interesting to those who said, well, you don't have, any plan. Actually, that's incorrect. By selecting populace, that was an important move. And for those who don't realize, that is the former HOK. What kind of confidence what steered you to them and gave you the confidence that was the right group to be with?
Well, Steve, I think a number of things. Number one, they are, I think, widely recognized as the sports architects in the business. They've done a lot outside of college. They've done a lot of Olympic-type facilities. They've done a lot of professional facilities. They've also done a lot of college facilities. So that kind of breadth of experience was really important to us. This is a partnership on campus between OPP and Penn State Athletics. So the team, the Penn State team, that was important too. I think the second thing is, and this is, I'm gonna break my own golden rule here. This plan is not just about our football venue, not just yep. about Beaver Stadium. It's about 31. But I will tell you this: the fact that that Populous is currently doing Kyle Field at Texas A&M, which has widely been touted as one of the really great marriages of the old and the new, respecting tradition, maintaining kind of the integrity of what's been a great facility for a long time, but then addressing the today's modern needs. We believe that's something we're going to need to take on, and so that was certainly a factor. And then the third one, and this is admittedly way down the list, but it's a factor as well, is that they're two Penn Staters.
Yeah.
On the populist team, and it's not because necessarily just hiring Penn Staters is the right thing, but they understand Penn State, and I think you can't undervalue that.
And one being, of course, former All-American linebacker Scott Radisic. Absolutely. Now, for those who may not realize it, a lot of Penn State fans were in Baltimore. You walked by an HOK or populist, now populist facility in Oriole Park at Camden Yards, which does exactly what you talked about, takes old and makes it new.
Yes, and it's interesting because I got asked in the student town hall what my favorite populist project was. And, of course, growing up a Baltimore Oriole fan, Camden Yards comes right to the top of the list, right?
Right. Of course.
But that's one where they built new. They didn't recreate anything, or they didn't renovate or add to. They took elements from the old Memorial Stadium and then did a lot of new stuff. What I believe we're looking at, and this has captured a lot of attention as well, is renovating Beaver Stadium to address the fan, the game day needs, that exist. But I certainly wouldn't be doing my job. I know there's some disagreement about this, but I certainly wouldn't be doing my job and my fiscal, responsibility to the institution if we didn't ask Populous to examine the two, possibilities, which are renovate, address the needs through renovation, address the needs through a new facility. And so that's exactly what they're going to do. I believe the answer, for a variety of reasons, is going to be renovation.
But you still have to lay all the options with the numbers on the table to make a rock-solid decision. Fair assessment?
No, absolutely. And that's why we're doing it. And there really are two aspects to it. It's not just the numbers, although the numbers are a huge part of it. It's we have to identify our needs through this process, and then sometimes there are needs that just can't be addressed through renovation, or you make sacrifices in addressing those needs, and we just need to know what those are, if any at all, in our case.
Now, this is not Beaver Stadium is obviously the center of this of this when it comes down to every fan around here, but this is a 31 sport look.
Yeah,
the importance, Sandy, in the end of looking at all the facilities, everything from the Natatorium to Jeffrey Field to I'm just scratching the surface.
Sure. We have every one of our 31 programs has facility needs. You know, some of them are relatively small, particularly relatively small when you look at it from, let's say, the perspective of you mentioned the McCoy Natatorium. I mean, that is our facility probably in the most dire need. And, you know, I can't imagine that there's, that coming out of this, there's not going to be a plan to, you know, to build a new natatorium. Been asked a lot of questions about Jeffrey Field. You know, the interesting thing for us, and there's a part of this that, well, it's a big part of this that we'd be really, really proud of, is if you look at and you talk about the actual needs of our student athletes on game day. So for instance, the field in Beaver Stadium, the field at Jeffrey Field, the field in our lacrosse facility. None finer in the country. You know, the playing surface, the things that our student athletes need on game day in those three facilities are beyond taken care of. They play on the very best that this country has to offer. And again, there's a lot of pride in that. Where the needs are, where that gap analysis comes in, has to do with, particularly as you look at Jeffrey and lacrosse, it has to do with game day, has to do with stands, has to, seating, has to do with concession stands, has to do with press box, video board, restrooms, also team rooms in a number of these situations. So, you know, those aren't as big as, let's say, a new auditorium or a new tennis center, or a renovated Beaver Stadium, but their needs, significant needs, pressing needs nonetheless.
Give me the importance when you go to the town halls and you meet with groups that they understand that this is all going to be done in a phased way and not all at once.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's certainly one of the things that we need to try to get through. It's been difficult, because as you've already mentioned, and I've mentioned as well, a lion's share of the attention and the focus moves right to Beaver Stadium. But even, you know, in a renovation project for Beaver, that would be done in a phased approach, so that you know, we're not interrupting any part of any football season, which we certainly cannot do, and have no options. Locally to move to. But, you know, that's one of the messages that needs to get across. The other is we're not going to build anything we can't afford.
Right.
And so that's why, the cost of these, that's why, you know, we're starting out with needs and wants. You know, all of us are going in there and saying, wouldn't it be great to do this, or wouldn't it be great to do that, or to have this, or to have that. And eventually, when it comes down to actually putting together an executable plan, you know, it'll come down to what these price tags look like in today's dollars, and then ultimately what they look like as we phase through it, because this will, you know, addressing these needs will not be a small number. We know that.
Sandy, you and I have discussed just going through like money and needs and making sure it's within budgets. There are several ways, obviously, of doing this. Wow, Terry Pegula and Kim Pegula make a donation. There's a hockey rink. Beaver Stadium has had additions to it done on mortgages at times.
We call that debt service.
Yes, yes, we call that debt service. And then there's the Jordan Center. Governor Casey, 60% of the money was from the state as a jobs program. About 40%, I think, at Medler Field, Lebronto Park, Governor Rendell was part of that. Does all of this enter into the equation as to how you're going to look at it? Would there be any thought of talking to the state about state money in a jobs program like the Jordan Center at Medler Field, Lebronto Park, or would that be off the table?
You know, Steve, I'm at this point in my time at Penn State, I'm certainly not familiar enough with the with the state's approach to or their you know, their interest in helping with facilities and,
that's,
you know, kind of what their criteria are. But there's no doubt we'll be looking at all sources and if there are conversations to be had with the state about what they might be able to do, what they might be interested in, what we could convince them to do, you know, that's not off the table from my perspective. But I do think that we certainly have to recognize that philanthropy is going to be our primary source here, and that, you know, a very generous Penn State alumni base who want to, who have great pride in Penn State and what we've achieved athletically. But when I say what we've achieved athletically, that means that combination of student athletes who perform not only well on the field, court, pool, track, strip, course, but that they also are performing in the classroom. There's an awful lot of pride around that, and I believe that we'll certainly be able to count on our alumni to help us create what I believe can be the best facilities in the country.
And because of philanthropy, you've been able to get, you know, the renovation cooking over at Lash Building because of philanthropy, a new film room for the basketball teams. I mean, you know, you have some very generous people out there.
Oh, we absolutely do. And then again, it's back to they understand, they have the wherewithal, and they understand the impact that they're making on not only these students, but their university. And, you know, we're talking about facilities here, Steve, but, you know, there's no greater impact than our alumni and community and those that care really deeply about Penn State that they can make, you know, there's no greater impact than they make than endowing a scholarship.
Exactly.
And, and having you and I both were at the endowed scholarship brunch just a couple of weeks ago. And I mean, you look around that room and you think of the number of young people who have an opportunity to receive a Penn State education, because a Penn Stater cared about giving back.
Finally, you have the town hall meetings that you're doing. From your perspective, as you stand there and listen to questions, what are you trying to absorb in listening to either comments or questions along the way in your mental note-taking?
Yeah, you know, we certainly have a particular focus in wanting to get out there with the strategic plan, of which the facilities master plan is going to help us execute on some of those strategic goals and objectives. But for me, more than anything else, 1 year into my time at Penn State, it's really about hearing what's on people's minds. Sure, some of it relates to maybe things that I have commented on or that I've talked about in the presentation. I ask a couple of very pointed questions about certain aspects of it. What's your response to this? What's that feel like to you when I say, you know, we are, when I say the Penn State's reputation, those kinds of things. But, you know, people come to these things, because they maybe want to hear, but they also want to be heard. And that's really, really important to me because it really helps us, keep a pulse on, what our community cares about, what's important to them, how they want to make an impact, and what it is they're proud of that we're doing, or what it is they'd like us to do more of or less of. And so the listening phase is really important.
But it's also been important along the way, too, that you have wanted to make sure that this particular was very open in process. That's why everyone's finding out about the early steps.
Oh, absolutely. And, yeah. And again, it's led to a little bit of, you know, particularly there were a few students that walked out of the room and said, well, you know, she really wasn't very specific about very much. And, you know, you chuckle a little bit. But that's, we were giving them the 30,000 foot view and certainly want either validation that we're headed in the right direction or comments around, whoa, tap the brakes here or slam the brakes. That doesn't make any sense at all, that's what we're looking for.
Well, I know you have other things you have to get to, so what I'll do is I'll tap the brakes on the interview and appreciate the time very, very much, Sandy.
Always a pleasure, Steve. Thanks so much.
Sandy Barber, Penn State's athletic director, back with more, including a Kevin Plimp update in a moment, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, bottom of the hour, we'll update you on the Plimp, which is down near Jason's house.
And that has been confirmed by Jason, but not necessarily NORAD.
And these are the people we trust to track missiles? We told them the thing's down.
Little concerned.
Man, this is not inspiring any confidence in my part.
No.
Okay? If you guys want to know, it's over here.
We could either confirm or deny. That's okay. We don't need you.
Basically, we've been on our own for a while anyway. Don't tell Walter Brash, okay?
If you're like me, you're tired of all the Halloween spooktacular deals and sick of the ghostly low prices. Since when did Halloween become a car buying holiday anyway? Well, Sunbury Motors Hyundai isn't about silly hype. They offer good old-fashioned feel-good deals all the time. Sunbury Motors Hyundai is the official sponsor of great cars at great prices. And they want you in an Elantra. To prove it, there's 0% financing for 72 months on all in-stock 2016 Elantras. Check out the completely redesigned 2016 Hyundai Tucson. In stock now. Or at SunburyHyundai.com. These impressive SUVs are priced at invoice minus rebates till October 31st. Prices start at just $25,411. At Sunbury Motors Hyundai, veterans and all active military receive an additional $500 off your new Hyundai in honor of your service. Forget about scary offers. Ditch the Halloween tricks and leave your costume at home. At Sunbury Motors Hyundai, it's simply good old-fashioned, feel-good deals year-round. Sunbury Motors Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at SunburyHyundai.com.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And again, the blimp is down. Don't bother listening to NORAD or the Pentagon. We have a guy that's like looking at it.
And by the way, if you go to SteveJonesShow.com, you'll see the photos. They are now posted. On our Facebook page, not at SteveJonesShow.com yet.
No offense, could you email them to NORAD?
Well, they can go to our Facebook page. Just go to Steve Jones Show on Facebook. They'll see the photos, and then they can confirm it.
These are the people we trust with Russian missiles?
A little scary.
And they have to go to our Facebook page to figure out whether their blimp is down?
The tracking device worked as well as the mooring device.
Okay. I'm not painting a pretty picture here. All right. Let's bring in Dave Paulson, head basketball coach at George Mason. Dave, welcome back. It's great to have you with us.
Hey, Steve. Great to be on the show. I had nothing to do with the blimp escaping our area here. Okay?
That's the only reason why we brought you on the show, Dave. We thought we could draw you out on this, but evidently you're going to put up a wall.
Well, I'm an expert, but it's highly classified, Steve, and I could tell you what really happened, but then I'd have to shoot you. So I'm not going to do that.
Well, the Penn State Sports Network says thanks for that. All right, so yeah. Let's get to this team. Every team brings with it, even if it's year-to-year with a team, its own challenges. What are some of the initial challenges that you've had to face in putting this new program together at George Mason? Dave?
I think we just – yep. I was going to say his phone was fading in and out there. He thought he found a good spot, but he must have been too close to NORAD.
I think the government stepped in.
I think I do. I do. They couldn't take us busted on it anymore.
They've had enough of this. I mean, Lawrence is going to have a field day tomorrow. He has to scrap his entire show, and he's going to come in to a new show. Despite what the promo says. 20,000 people without power.
PPL working hard to get those folks back on power. Yeah,
no,
I'll tell you
No kidding.
When you have something come through the area that snaps power lines, that can't be an easy fix.
No, it cannot be. And who knows how many it snapped.
Oh, actually, Jennifer just updated. It's down to about 8,000. So they are making some quick moves there in Columbia County.
Good for them. You know, that's a real credit to them. They work awfully hard. You put them out there, you know, after an ice storm, for example, and they are working round the clock like that.
I mean, this can't be something you plan for at PPL. No. It's like, you know, ice storm, snowstorm.
So,
I'm sure they had extra people on hand because of the wind the way it is today, but...
Yeah.
Don't think blimp was on their list.
No, but I'm sure it brings with the same challenges as an ice storm snapping off a power line or a tree limb snapping off a power line. I can't imagine there's really any difference between them. But they're working hard. And for anybody without power, you know, there's probably a lot of people driving home right now wondering if they do have power. But it's great news that they've knocked it down to 8,000. Tough story today, and Dave's coming back, is Jerry Kill resigning at Minnesota effective immediately. Everyone tells you he's a good man, good coach, very loyal. You know, he has seven of his nine assistants on his staff have been with him for at least 15 years. But he's had epileptic seizures, so many of them, he finally decided he had to step down. He's had a couple more recently. And I know I've talked to Mike Grimm, Minnesota's play-by-play guy, a couple times, and he's seen a couple of them. He said they do get violent. And Tracy Clays is going to take over Minnesota for the rest of the year, like he did 2 years ago, and they went 4-3 under his leadership. Dave Paulson does rejoin us now. Dave, welcome back. I know the first question I asked you dealt with every program, you know, even year to year brings with it its own challenges. What have been some of the things on your checklist you've tried to take care of immediately with your current team to try and make sure that you overcome some of those early challenges?
Well, I think the first thing, Steve, was to build and establish a winning culture. And that's really reestablishing a winning culture that Mason, you know, clearly had, you know, a Final Four run 10 years ago, even as late as 2011, beating Villanova in the first round of the NCAA tournament. But, you know, the program had went through a couple rough years the last couple of years. And the byproduct of that is just an erosion of a culture of winning. And so that's been the biggest thing is to reestablish accountability and hard work and trust with our guys and a commitment to fundamental play. And so that's been the biggest concern with the returning guys. And then the second issue is when there's a coaching change and certainly when there's a losing culture, you know, there's attrition on the roster. So we recruited six players since I was hired in April. So we're going to have six freshmen out there, and that's, you know, as Al McGuire said, the best thing about freshmen is eventually they become sophomores.
Yeah, I know. I've always had an old saying that youth is a disease, but it can be cured. When you look at your team and your system, have you had to make any adaptations in your system because of the players that you have there right now? Or are they the ones that have to adapt to what you have to do?
Well, I think every year you have to adapt your system to your personnel. I mean, last year at Bucknell, we switched our offense at the semester exam break. You know, we just realized that what we were doing, what we'd been doing in the past, wasn't best suited to our personnel. And so, you know, the X's and O's will deviate based on your personnel, but the culture and the philosophy and the values, those are non-negotiable in terms of hard work and communication and playing with passion. So, yeah, we've tweaked it, and because we're starting from a low base fundamentally, you know, we're not able to get as nuanced in our system as we were maybe the last couple of years at Bucknell. But you know, we'd rather get a level of mastery with a couple things and that add on the next ingredient.
You also get a feel that when you get into the conference for base personnel on each team, base coaching style on each one of your opponents. What kind of learning curve has that been for you in going through some of the video of a new set of teams that you have to play?
Well, it's interesting because the biggest priority is taking care of ourselves, improving how hard we practice and our accountability and our culture. So that's been the biggest factor. But in watching film of league opponents, the interesting thing about the A-10 is it doesn't necessarily take on a unique style of its own. You know, I think most leagues, Patriot League being an example from what I could gather, the Big Ten, kind of regress to the mean. You know, here's kind of how the games are played. The A-10 is far-reaching geographically. It's really diverse. You've got, in the city of Richmond, you got VCU with 94 feet of pressure, and you've got University of Richmond that plays a matchup zone in the same city, right, in the same league. And so it's as diverse a style stylistically as any league in the country, potentially.
Have you been able to get into homes in recruiting? You mentioned you're bringing in six. Have you been able to get into homes recruiting where the brand name George Mason opens up doors that maybe Bucknell would not have just because of size of conference and so forth?
Yeah, I think in some ways, and obviously the brand name of Bucknell opens up a lot of doors
yes,
you know, with certain people, without a doubt. But the you know, the fact that we can say, hey, I'm at George Mason, we played in the Final Four 10 years ago, and we're in the Atlantic 10, which is one of the top five basketball conferences in the country, that, you know, that immediately resonates with a lot of the young men we're talking to.
What about on a personal level? Because you're a great family man, but it's also meant uprooting and moving. How's that process gone for you?
Well, you know what? That was the single hardest part about it. It was certainly hard to leave Bucknell and my players and the great community. But uprooting a family, that was the thing that was the most challenging for us. The nice thing is that, you know, this is a great area. We really love Northern Virginia. There's a lot to do. Our daughters have found good school systems, playing field hockey, getting involved. So I think all that is good. But it's, you know, everyone says it takes you at least a year to get readjusted. And, you know, I think that's true on our case.
The players on the team, eventually they have to be some of your best recruiters. This goes back to the culture question. When you've got a great culture going, you recruit, they end up being your best recruiters. Are you sensing now in the family you're trying to develop there that, you know, in the initial stages you might have something cooking with these players as to them understanding you and the culture?
Yes, I think we do now. You know, I think it took some time for the guys to understand me and me to get to know them. But now, you know, we had this fall five kids on official visits, and we got four verbal commitments out of those five visits. So that's the kind of success rate, you know, that we want. And the kids are the ultimate salespeople. And I think they really love what we're doing, the vision we have, the hard work we're putting in with them. And I think hopefully that will only continue to reap better and better benefits.
As you turn this page, Dave, how excited are you about the next chapter?
It's really exciting. You know, I mean, it's a new challenge. I think to have a new challenge always keeps people energized and refreshed. It's a tremendous basketball league with great coaching, and so it's a great challenge. But it's a place at George Mason with unbelievable potential, and I think we've got a chance to do some really, really special things here in the upcoming years.
Is there anything about this so far that has surprised you that maybe you didn't know before?
Well, one is that George Mason is a really, really good university. It's a better academic university than probably what I realized when I began the process. And so it really resonates with people, one. And two, I've forgotten how hard it is when you're starting over. It's exhausting because you're coaching everything. You know, the returning players aren't veterans in your system. You're trying to get acclimated with the different university personnel. So, you know, going through a renovation project is fun, exciting, exhilarating, but also incredibly exhausting.
Well, we'll let you get back to that. But thanks so much for checking in with us. A lot of people, you know, us included, just to thank you for the great job that you did here, and I wish you nothing but the best there.
Steve, I appreciate it, and it's not official yet, but there's a pretty good chance you'll see my team in the Bryce Jordan Center next year. And we're looking forward to getting a series going with Pat and the Penn State basketball team.
That'd be great, because I know I've done a couple games at the Patriot Center, and it's a great place to go to as well. Thank you so much.
All right, take care, Steve.
Thanks. Dave Paulson, head basketball coach at George Mason.
And we look forward to it because the last time George Mason was in the Jordan Center was that NIT game in 2009 where Taylor Battle hit that three-point shot at the wire to send it overtime, and Penn State won in overtime and spurred them on to the NIT championship. We'll wrap things up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Yes, the blimp is down.
Blimp is down. Repeat, the blimp is down.
Evidently, those cables are huge on that thing.
Yeah, Jason was saying he would called in the first hour telling us about it being in his backyard, literally, that those cables are like somewhere like thousands of feet long. So it's no wonder that they were causing so much damage as it came through the region snapping power lines.
Well, if it's 6,000 feet long, as an example, that means they're over a mile.
Okay. Well, they were probably dragging at one point because it was not 16,000 feet when it hit this area, I can tell you that much.
Wow.
It fell in a grove of trees that is near... near a cornfield, or what was left of a cornfield.
Good. I bet that's the good part.
Yes. NORAD did say that the area of the crash had been secure and a military recovery team was en route.
Maybe Jason can provide sandwiches and beverages.
I was just going to say, according to Jason, I think it would be more appropriate to say, he said, there are hundreds of cars in my yard. And a lot of them have government plates.
What, and they couldn't tell NORAD it was down?
Nobody could tell NORAD it was down.
Well, we can, first of all, the power outage thing is not great for anybody that lost power. PP&L working so hard, they've knocked it from 18,000 down to 8,000 out. That's obviously not good. Beyond that, nobody got hurt. I mean, nobody got hurt, to our knowledge.
Yes, we have heard of no injuries, fortunately.
And if the cables are as long as they claim they are, well, I mean, it would seem to me if it's enough to knock out a power line, it would be enough to wreck a car, it'd be enough to, to take someone out. I mean, they got lucky in this thing, if that's the case and nobody got hurt.
Rumor has it the cost was $2.8 million or billion. There's still a confusion of whether there's an M or a B after that 2.8.
As to what it cost to build it?
For this vessel.
Oh, okay. Well, they could have gone over to Sheets with some quarters to fill up there, but I mean.
Spokesman was unable to say if the it was unable to confirm that the blimp caused any of the outages, but there appears to be a connection.
Oh, I don't know.
Here's my favorite NORAD quote. Witnesses said they saw a long cable trailing from the blimp, which we had talked about, and they confirmed that it is an unknown amount of mooring cable trailing. Okay, Jennifer says she knows exactly how long it is. And
nearly a mile.
Thank you. I didn't need that. I had Steve Jones.
5,280 feet's a mile.
Yeah, well, there you go. It's a mile long.
Wow.
That was confirmed by Jennifer Wakeman, not NORAD, by the way.
Well, no offense, but I think she's
I would trust her more. Yeah. I think I would trust her as well.
So, repeating once again, these are the people that are in charge of missile defense. I don't think I'm going to sleep tonight.
On a serious side, we can.
And by the way, to everybody at NORAD who's listening right now, I'll pay your salary. I can say it.
Yeah, you're now under scrutiny. Your cell phone's now been tapped, my friend.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All kidding aside, seriously, though, they have basically closed off the site now. So if you're looking to drive out into the Turbotville area and get pictures of this, it's not going to happen. This is now a government, a military-based facility now, Area 51-ish, if you will. It is off limits.
We're treating it like Groom Lake?
they don't want anybody looking at this thing. The perimeter is now secured.
No offense, we've been looking at it for the last hour.
Well, I think they're worried about what's inside is what they're concerned about the leaking out.
Yeah. No kidding.
NORAD official, by the way, Charlie K of CBS reporting that through David Martin, that a NORAD official says there was never any serious consideration given to shooting down the blimp.
We're just going to just let it keep knocking out power. It's all good.
We figured it's going to hit Canada sooner or later, and you know we'll just surveillance Canada for a while.
Hmm. Wow. Quite a day here on the show.
Weirdest day ever.
Again, nobody, to our knowledge, got hurt. So...
This may be the most popular podcast we have ever done, by the way, which you could listen to at stevejonesshow.com. The Hour 1 podcast with Jason calling in to confirm the blimp down. And Hour 2 with Sandy Barber talking about the Beaver Stadium. Dave Paulson getting an update with him as well. We have all the photos that we've been talking about during the show on our Facebook page, through the Steve Jones Show Facebook page. You have some time tonight. Now that is must listen and must see.
So the tether is 6,700 feet of cable. So it's about a mile and a quarter.
But it's really rare. It would be a really rare instance that it broke.
Oh, here it is. There's a picture of it. Well, I can see it. It's in the trees in the field.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. I saw that. There's the picture. Yeah, I don't know. I just don't think it's going anywhere tonight.
I think it's secure, and so is the area surrounding it.
Jennifer, great job. I trust her more than NORAD. Tomorrow, our high school football previews and Bob Flounders from PennLive.com and the Patriot News.